If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grow America Show. Special episode this week, no interview, so no timestamp. You can't skip to shit. You're stuck with us. This is our Easter Island episode. I mean, it seems weird. It's taken 13 years. Is it 13 years this year or 14? 13, right?
13.
13 years coming up. So anyway, we're going to do an episode on Rapa Nui, Easter Island. I mean, we're going there. So we're going there in a few months. So we'll probably talk about that a little bit. Look at some maps. Talk about some theories. We got Ian in the chats already. He's coming with us to Easter Island. So that'll be fun. Have you over there. And of course, we got everybody's favorite podcaster, Graham Dunlop. The great Graham Dunlop, as I said on the episode we were just listening to from the retro catalog.
Yeah, Darren's been putting together a retro catalog. We've been going through some guests that we've talked to like 12 years ago, 11 years ago, like some gems in there, for sure. If you're a Spotify listener, check out Grimerica Radio.
Yeah, it's a new sort of radio station-y. It's basically all of the interviews we've ever done chopped up without any interruptions. So there's no interlude, there's no outros, there's no intros. It's just interview to interview to interview to interview. There is roundups, so you will run into a roundup in there. But other than that.
So that'll be roundup as in Grimerica Outlawed. So you've got that mixed in there. So Grimerica Radio's got on Spotify specifically. And then there's also our normal podcasts on Spotify. Like you can still get our audio podcasts on Spotify too, but these are videos, right? And they would be Outlawed, Grimerica Outlawed, and Grimerica, right? On Grimerica Radio.
Correct. Yeah, and all the old Rockfin stuff we did as well.
That could be one of the best ways to support us, really, because YouTube's really not, I mean, YouTube we've been struggling with for 12 or, I don't know, 10 years. Or I don't know when we actually started putting these on YouTube, but Spotify seems to be helpful in this way. Discoverability for us and a little bit of kickback as well, which helps.
Yeah, it's sort of a growing revenue stream that doesn't cost you any money, especially if you're on most of you are probably premium Spotify members already. And if you're not, I think there's ads in it. If you are, there isn't ads in it. So it's not up to me. But most of you are premium. So if you're on premium, you know, throw it on in the background while you're sleeping, while you're working.
Sleep with Grimerica. There's some lucid dreaming. Oh, I mean, that's another good one. We should get that lucid dreaming guy, Robert Wagner. That'll be a good old episode to get on there.
Wasn't there two lucid dreaming guys? Was there one before that even?
Yeah, there might have been, but I think the one book that I read, Stephen LaBerge, is the one guy that I wanted to have on. I don't think we had him on at all. Huh. I mean, we did do other lucid dreaming episodes, but I'm talking about the two main guys from like 10, 15 years ago that were researching it.
Well, anyway, it's 8 shows a day. The foreseeable future of just nonstop interviews. Share it with your friends. I mean, that's another good way to do it. They're on Spotify. They don't figure out the podcast app or nothing. Just, hey, check this out. Go through, find an episode that you think people would like. I mean, this could be grammerica.ca/support, right? That's the way to support the show. We've been trying to get everyone to sign up for just $1 a month. For if we get like 20,000 of you, 30,000 of you to sign up for $1 a month, even more. Some episodes are way more than that. That's sort of the average. If we could get you all to sign up for $1 a month, just shut the fuck up. We won't have to tell you anything ever. We'll just crack jokes. But, you know, we're not.
You won't even notice it. You won't even notice it.
It's $1. Really? I mean, you're wasting more than $1 a month on something. Anyway, we do have some people that did answer the call this week. Not as many as you'd think, though. Again, it's people picking up the slack. I don't think I'm allowed to say this person's name. I'm supposed to credit it as Junta, like Junta with a T. But they came through with $10 a month. So that makes up for 10 of you fucks. So, I don't know who. You guys can figure that out. And then we also have picking up the slack, Adam Fitch, coming in with $4 a month. So, you know, that also helps.
Thanks, guys. That's awesome. That really does help.
If everyone signed up for $4 a month, holy moly. Anyway, we could give away free spots for trips then. Anyway, all that aside, that's a way to support the show by just listening. If you put...
Here's some good feedback from the chat from Dick Simpson.
Ah!
Guys, I'll give you $5 a month if you put better descriptions and original release dates on your Spotify channel. Are you talking about Grimerica Radio, Richard Simpson, or are you talking about the old, like, our normal audio podcasts that go on there? Because they should have... All that stuff should be there.
The original shows would have it all. But the new shows would not. I have not added that. It wouldn't be hard to add that, except that there's 1,000.
All of it, he says. Okay.
Well, all the original, yeah. God, that is quite an undertaking.
So release dates and put better descriptions. So what do you mean by better?
That's on you, buddy, because I just copy the show notes. Unless there is.
Well, I think he means title descriptions. Richard, do you mean title descriptions or better descriptions like... Of the overall episode, because we have pretty extensive show notes on 99.9% of them.
You know, I thought some of the titles were pretty good too.
I thought Darren would have been reworking the titles a bit to make them better.
Let's see some of the latest titles.
I listened to a Randall Carlson interview that was a decade old. Thought it was new. Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's a good.
The original release dates would be easy, but it might as well be new. I mean, what's changed? Nothing.
Anyway. Jared and I were laughing because we were just talking about that, those old Randall Carlson episodes and putting them on there.
We got coming out on that channel in a couple days. Former economic hitman reveals corporate takeover strategy with John Perkins.
And Ian says he was also swindled by that.
It doesn't matter where you find that episode, it's still going to be old. But yeah, I get it. I'll try and put the original dates in moving forward. But I won't do the old ones. We'll call it $2 a month. $2.50. I'll meet you halfway. See? Making things on the show. So anyway.
He says he thought Randall looked a little young. Yeah, he's aged a little bit in the last decade.
A little bit. We were talking, though, there's 8 Randall Carlson shows on there.
Yeah.
8 of them. And probably a new one coming up. I think we're going to probably talk to him soon to do a roundup sort of our trip to the Azores.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Anyway, that John Perkins episode is from 2014, I think, right? Is that?
Yeah. So Richard K. Simpson, that's from 11 years ago, the economic hitman one.
I think he's kind of woke now, so it's a good thing we got him when we did. Isn't he?
I could be. You know, I think I had a really weird weird experience in that episode. I'd totally studied up way too much for him, and it felt very
you were nervous for that one. I remember you don't ask a lot of questions. You're it was too much for you. It was too much too soon. You weren't expecting.
Yeah.
We're expecting that. Remember, we got Dennis McKenna early too. I mean, the funny part is we sound like total dorks on a lot of those old episodes too. That's kind of the shame.
How are you doing this fine evening, sir?
Especially in the beginning. But you know, the questions are just as good. Questions. I guess probably the questions have evolved as we've learned over the time how to make podcast a bit better. And as your sort of knowledge base grows, then so does your ability to ask questions that don't sound retarded.
Yeah.
I may have been drunk at a few of those early ones.
And we had and we had a bunch of audio problems along the way too. We were always trying to figure out the best way to do the audio. So,
well, back then there was none of this shit existed. So when we started, we had to have a mixer and an extra computer that to set up the Skype call on, that had to go through and do this whole mix minus thing through a mixing board. I mean, I have all that old stuff in the it's in a bin in my closet.
I was gonna say in a museum or
if anybody wants
a museum.
Actually, I was going to give it to him in the Azores. He didn't end up making it, but I have your old mic here who am I thinking of? The Australian dude who was in Egypt. I just cleaned my studio and found it.
Greg?
Not Greg, the other one.
Brian,
yeah. Brian, shout out to Brian, probably Lord Brian by this point. He's a pretty big supporter. I don't know if he is or not, but I found this package that I actually thought I mailed like 9 months ago. So I have your mic.
Brian's probably bitching about the post office.
It's got even some goodies in it. So that's coming out. That's your original microphone that you did the first episodes on. Is that, it was the Heil. Is it the Heil? No. Yeah, the Heil PR40 or something crazy like that. I have that in a box, addressed, ready to go. I found it in my closet. So spring cleaning around here because we're hoping it's an early spring. It's supposed to be 17 or 18 here tomorrow. Maybe 20 on Thursday. So I don't see how it's going to happen. But I went ice fishing yesterday. There's still 24 inches of ice on the lake.
I was just
barely gets through.
I was just on the coast and the rain, it was just raining solid almost for like 4 or 5 days there.
So I wonder if Richard is a transplant from the new Spotify feed. Wouldn't that be something if it's paying off already?
Yeah.
Anyway, and he's already talking about giving us money. What is your excuse if you've been listening for a decade and you're still not signed up? America.ca/support. Sign up for a month or make a one-time donation today. The other thing is we're about to do all this chatting about Easter Island. There's 4 spots left right now, or maybe 5, one of the two left for we're going to Easter Island. It's only like $4,000. That includes the flight from Santiago to Easter Island back. I actually have to check. I might have to raise the ticket prices here this week because I have to double check to see if the flight prices have gone up, because I'm keeping an eye on the flight price from Santiago to Easter Island and back, which is included in the ticket. You get the night before at the hotel. We'll all be at the hotel together at the airport in Santiago. And then the next morning we'll have breakfast and then fly to Easter Island for 7 days and stay in this apartment complex. And then we'll be there for 7 days. We'll see all the sights, do all the hikes. We have a free day there. If you want to hit the beach or go swimming, we'll get to see the stars, of course. We'll have a local guide with us. Graham and I will probably do some presentations in the evening. We're going to have a good time. But I do have to keep an eye on that flight price. So if that goes up a couple $100, I'll have to bump the ticket up accordingly. But it is only like $4,000. We had people saying we thought it was $9,000. No, it's only like $4,200. And that includes everything. And then I know there's some people that are already planning some extension stuff for after that. We got a couple of people in the chats that are planning to go down to Patagonia while they're down in South America. So there could be a little hitch along effect. There's already some people planning it where if you want to come to Easter Island with us, do the trip and then go spend a week with these other people that you just became friends with, which I guarantee will happen, then you can go fart around with them for a week or two down in South America. I will be coming home. I mean, the flight is so long, dude.
To go from Santiago to, from where, Toronto to Santiago, or where is it?
To go from my house to Santiago is long.
No, I know from your house, but where's the main airport that goes down that one?
So I can go through LA, Dallas, or New York.
Oh, so that's even long then to get there too.
Yeah, the first jump is going to be, it's like there's almost... They're all shitty. The New York one is especially shitty because that's a super long flight followed by a super long flight. Dallas would be the best, I guess. It's sort of the most in line. Also the most expensive. So, of course. And then it's a big plane from Santiago to Easter Island. It's a big plane. It's the like three row bitch, you know?
Well, I should hope so. I mean,
you'd need a lot of fuel. I mean, just in case you get weather there and you have to turn around and fly back, there's nowhere to go for thousands of miles. So, speaking of which, you should pull up the map.
Pull up the bathymetric map.
It's a five and a half hour flight, 5 hour, 15 minute from Santiago. So, I mean, that'll be cool too. We'll just be hanging out on the plane. We'll have a whole section of the plane to ourselves, go to Easter Island back. When else are you going to have this kind of opportunity to go to Easter Island? I honestly don't think we'll do it again. So this is probably like a once in a lifetime opportunity to go to Easter Island with us. And I can vouch for, I haven't met the two guys yet. There's a fellow from New York and a local boy here from Calgary that's coming that we haven't met. Every other single person that's coming on the trip is people we have traveled pretty extensively with that I can personally vouch for. So we're going to have a time doing this trip. It was really literally once in a lifetime. So make it happen, Cap'n. I mean, there's a million excuses not to do it. Find an excuse to do it. We're taking off 2.5 months, 3 months. We got to be there April 20. I think I fly out April 20th or something like that. Tour starts April 22nd to April 30th.
Well, here's the map. Here's the bathymetric map. This is the ncei.noaa.gov map. But it's having a hard time loading this area. Okay, there we go. So what were you wanting to look at? Here's
where's Easter Island?
There's the Azores, right? That's the North Atlantic. That's the Atlantic Ridge there.
Yeah.
And then over here on this side in the Pacific, we have...
Wait, before you zoom in, let me guess. The Easter Island's going to be end up being where that sort of cross of yellow is.
Right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's right beside the sea of the East Pacific Riser. So this, and the weird thing is, this is all like underwater. Like the next island above the water is probably over here in Polynesia. So I'm just going to slowly go in, slowly. So there's where Santiago, like right over there, right? Right over here. Oh, there it is right there. So that's Santiago right there.
Man, it's way down there, eh?
Yeah. So I'm just going to zoom in slowly, but look at all these little. And that's that big, you remember that happened on the Atlantic too? Remember that little jolt that happened on the other side?
Yeah.
Like it just stretched right over. Like, where is it? Right here. Right there too. Oh yeah. And right there. And then over there. It's like somebody just grabbed it, twisted that bottom part around.
So show me where Easter Island is then. Zoom in on it.
Okay. So now let's go slowly here. Zeus is bugging me right now. Yeah, there it is. So it's not in this area here, this Challenger fracture zone. It is right here. Oh, right there.
Okay, so you know, want to see something? Just keep that there for a second. I'm going to take over the screen share for a minute.
Okay.
But I'm going to bet you money that lines up with this here. Oops. I am bet that lines up right here.
Where those two things meet?
Nazca plate line, the Pacific plate, and the Antarctica plate all coincide. Right?
It does look like that. Yep. It looks like that's exactly where it is. Yeah, I don't know unless yours coincides there or there, because
it's going to be close.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's right here, and it's the only thing that, you know what the weird thing is? It's the only one above the water out of all this stuff, out of all this whole area. It's the only one that peaks out above the water there.
So then you got the Antarctic ice sheet and all those plates there. That now the interesting one would be that I doubt that the Pacific one would have had much ice on it. Or the Nazca one. So maybe ice is less relevant there, but it is still a static point. Because the interesting about the Azores is when you look at the opposite side of all the plates it's on, there was ice caps. So it's like cantilevering all those, not cantilevering, but levering all those all those hinge points lever the Azores up. I don't know if that's the thing here, but it's not a coincidence that this is a volcanic island with a caldera that is on the meeting point of three tectonic plates.
Well, I was checking with Grok, and it wasn't very open-minded about all this stuff, but it says there's not the same geological evidence that the Atlantic has. Like, there's not the continental granite and the sand, the coastal sand that's down miles that shows like something sunk. So it definitely doesn't seem to be. Oh, that guy looks like it's sticking up above there. Oh, it's still a seamount. It's still underneath.
How far underneath? So I wonder if you can make a chain all the way back.
Yeah,
I wonder.
See, that's the Pukau seamount. That's 26 meters elevation.
Less than 100 feet then.
Actually, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. Hang on. The elevation's not showing up. Do I need to add the elevation map? Is that what's going on here? This has all changed since the last time I used it. So let me see what else.
Updated it.
Bathymetric multi-beam survey. Trying to remember which. I can't find it. Oh, digital elevation models here. All DEMs. It's supposed to show all DEMs. Continuously updated digital. Color shaded DEM footprints. I don't know if those are going to matter. Maybe I'll refresh it quick just to see. Oh, no. Yeah. Look at this. How did I get that? Let's see what happens when I click on Antarctica. See, this has all changed now. They have the Arctic and Mercator and Antarctic down here.
It does make a whole island chain. That's 400 meters, though.
Yeah, Casey Farrell's in the chat. They're saying, yeah, Pukau. That's why I thought I recognized that name, Casey, because Pukau is the name of the hats that are on the. So I wonder if the top of that seamount looks like a hat. You might be able to check it on Google and see.
About 400 meters less. This is Rapa Nui. And then you'd have this whole sort of chain of islands going right back to the coast. But I think it's only 130 meters that they say. But you still got, so this is at agreed upon sort of, right? 130 meters, 400 feet. That's how much they say the sea level came up from the ice sheets melting. So just from there, you can go right from Chile and follow this chain of islands all the way out to Rapa Nui.
So that's interesting. So
you could get there from both sides, really.
Yeah, you could.
The same thing this way. So Rapa Nui is right here. And this is with 400 feet less water. Then you got this island. And there you got all these little islands.
Oh, I see. So what you're saying is that, like, according to the science of the Younger Dryas, like 12,000 years ago, those all would have shown. If there was no, like, uplifting or downlifting or isostatic depression on this side or anything like that. If it all stayed pretty much the way it is.
It looks like it, but then when I click on it, it says it's not. Minus 111 meters. Oh, yeah, so it would be above water at 130. Above water, 100 meters. Above water, 168 meters. Probable water level, 18 meters. I think I'm just not quite on it. When you zoom in too far, it changes. Above water, 113 meters. So they'd be sort of mountainous probably and shitty, but it looks like they would be there. But you could have easily got there, it looks like. 12,000 years ago. You know?
I was trying to challenge Grok a little bit on, like, what's the mainstream theory about it and what are some, and trying to challenge it on some of the the alternative, you know, theories like what you're talking about. And it wasn't really open to it. It was pretty disappointing, actually. It was like, just kept spitting out all this mainstream slop on, it's from the 1200. They, you know, the latest theory is they got there in the 1200s. And then the ship showed up at 1722 is when it was kind of officially discovered, but they had, the Polynesians had been there since the 1200, supposedly.
1200 AD though.
Yeah. They wouldn't. I was like, well, do you think they built those megalithic things? And oh yeah, it's all like, you know, they chiseled them with this dense, basalt, like hammers, stones. That's how they carved them all out. I've got a couple of videos to show you that it's pretty mind blowing.
Sure. Do you want to start?
Okay. Let me start with the video and then I'll show you some of the stuff that Grok and I were talking about and all that. So this is this is just from a video where the giants walked. Of course, I'm getting all these texts now that I'm finally live here. They're talking about how the days would have been hard. These guys working, like all these people, teams working to carve these things out of the stone, and what it would have been like when they came out. So, but it's worth just watching a bit of this here.
The days would have been hard. Many traditional Rapa Nui working songs survive today.
And so there we are. There, and that's them. This is them taking. This is a like. This is not a parody. It's serious. This is them carving out one with. This is how they would have carved it out. Ready? Look at this. So then the song has like two rocks banging together in it, and that's like supposedly like they're singing these songs while they carve out these things.
We can imagine the workers singing while they chipped away at the cliff. Once,
I mean, what do you think of that? Honestly. Supposedly this is completely accepted, like that they're doing this even like up past discovery, past the 1700s. What do you think?
How long do you think it would take?
They say like a month, I think, for a whole team of them to actually fully extract one of these things.
Month of Moai?
Even derives its rhythm.
I mean, would you, what?
A month of Moai?
Volcanic tuff, that's what these are made out of. I know they say it's pretty soft, but look at the way it's bouncing. I mean, it's still, to me, I don't care how soft the rock is. If you're going to hammer it with just another rock to carve it out, I just don't see it. I just don't see
the, can't be that soft either, because they haven't dissolved from the rain. And they don't even really show any signs of dimpling. And I mean, I guess we'll see better when we go there, but it doesn't look like it. And not only that, there's a bunch of other clearly cyclopean stuff there.
Well, like 757 says in the chats, the polygonal masonry on Rapa Nui is just indisputable to its relationship with South America and other parts in the world too. And then Casey says, in Hancock's Ancient Apocalypse, he says, you could follow that island chain to mainland of Chile, and the first thing you'd meet on the mainland is the candelabra. Oh, that's interesting. To Paracas. That is interesting.
You got a new member. That's a way to support the show.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, let's picture them carving out a massive 30-foot moai with these stones.
From the striking together of two stones, emulating the sounds of the Toki tools napping away at the statue. Here it is, recorded especially for this podcast by children from the Toki School of Music on Easter Island. The workers' hands must have been covered in the blackish dust of the stone, and they would take breaks to eat meals of sweet potato and taro, along with the chicken baked white in earth ovens nearby. After much arduous work, the whole outline of the moai would be carved out. They would then deepen the cuts and hollow out the cliff behind the statue too.
This is one of the reasons I want to show it to you, because it's got something to do with my nub theory, but So here's that white thing there is the moai, and this is them with those rocks for a month chipping away.
Is there any scoop marks?
I don't know if there's scoop marks.
I don't know.
I mean, this is the thing.
Clambering into the narrow space and lying on their bellies as they carved. But even with the back carved out.
So look at this. They're lying on their bellies, carving, hammering that out, and just like on their bellies going down to the bottom.
Out. The statue would still be attached to the bedrock below with a narrow keel that ran the length of its spine. And so the final and most painstaking stage of the process would begin. They would gather up stones and earth in order to support the moai so that it didn't fall. And then this spine of stone would slowly...
So how do you slowly... If you fill it with dirt and rocks, how do you carve away the last bit of that spine from one end to the other? Like how to...
Be chipped away.
Just chipped away.
It must have been an incredible moment when that last stone umbilical cord was cut. It was the culmination of so much time and sweat, of course.
So just to get back to that picture. So this is where I remember when I told you about the nut, my theory on the nubs, right? They use this machine or whatever, this device to go. It's got that minimum radius, which now they're in Rapa Nui, the minimum radius is the height of a lying body, a crawling body over the top of this thing with those dense stones. What do they call them? The
dandrite balls or
dandrite? No, that's in Egypt, but here they're just basalt. They're dense basalt, they call them. But anyways, so if they use this machine in these cyclopean works and you get to this point, right? And they go, and let's say the middle of this gets all done and then you end up with two or three little pillars, right, Darren? Like two or three little pillars here. Oh, you took away my thing.
Yeah, I took it away for a sec. I was trying to show this picture here.
What about what I was trying to describe to you, my theory about the nubs? You don't want to hear it?
I do, but do you think those are scoops?
They look like it.
It looks like the same, right?
Oh, over the nose. Remember we were talking about that? That's the key right there. Because that doesn't mean a body was lying in there. That means like why were they over the nose like that, right?
Why bother?
Yeah.
You need more swing radius?
Yeah, you need more radius for the tool they're using.
All right. Well, you can have it back.
It does look like. Anyways, the point is that this is what my theory about the nubs is that how come my...
It would still be attached to the bedrock below with a...
You know what I mean? As you end up with this little... It's a thinner one. Let me just go on.
Narrow keel that ran the length of its spine. And so the final and most painstaking stage of the process would begin. They would gather up stones and earth in order to support the moai so that it didn't fall. And then...
So right here, like you'd have two little... Let's say the middle gets carved away with the machine or whatever you're using, right? And then you end up with a couple nubs on these blocks. We're talking about blocks, not a moai, right? And then that's what you're left with before you break the thing off the out of the quarry. No?
Quarry nubs?
No.
But what's his name said they poured it all.
And then this spine of stone edged clear of its quarry resting place, with huge teams of workers pulling ropes spun from the hau tree. When the statue was clear, they slid it down the grassy slope of the volcano so that it could be stood upright at the bottom of the slope. This was one of the most dangerous parts of the moai's journey, as the great number of cracked and abandoned statues on the slope below the quarry shows us. They look like an army of stony wanderers marching down from the volcano. And somewhat ironically, these abandoned statues, buried up to their necks in the refuse from the quarry, form some of the most iconic images of Easter Island today, more familiar to the layman than the completed ones that stand on the Ahu platforms on the coast. This is why people talk about the stone heads of Easter Island, ignoring the fact that most of the moai have bodies.
A great video there of like the all digging out the bottom of that.
Bottom of the hill, the workmen would raise the moai up to a standing position so they could finish carving the details on its back. using soft pumice to wear it smooth. And then they would prepare to transport the statue into its final resting place on its ahu. The carvers could wipe the sweat from their foreheads and share congratulations. But this was just the beginning of another long and arduous chapter in the Moai's journey.
So I don't have to keep playing that, but what do you think of that so far? What do you think of the sliding it down on the back, down the hill?
I think it's bullcrap.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not just that. Look at this. You see that wall there?
Yeah.
With the slight curvature. What does that look like?
It looks like the pillowy cyclopean blocks, really, doesn't it?
I think I could even just, let's play some of this. See if we get in trouble.
Statues known as the Moai are so iconic and ingrained into the fabric of modern, very ancient to those scenes.
So look at that wall.
More details about this in just a minute, but first let me share a few facts and some other intrigue. Lying isolated in the East Pacific, Easter Island, also known as Rap,
skip ahead
today, megalithic mortarless walls on the southwest corner of the island at a site called Ahu Venapu.
Wow, dude.
We're going
we
there.
We get to see that?
We get to see that.
Holy shit.
So we just looked at all those islands coming out from Peru, which is not far, which is basically, you know, from Chile, which ain't, how far is that from basically being an extension of the Machu Picchu and all that, right? Extension of the same culture. Which will get even more interesting when we get a little further along.
This megalithic wall seen here on Easter Island to what we see here in Peru in the Cusco and Sacred Valley areas. Notice the striking similarities that both feature multi-ton finished stones that are mortarless and precision crafted. So fine, you really couldn't fit a piece of paper through the stones.
So you think they did that with that little chisel thing you had there?
That's what they say. I mean, this is the theory they're sticking to it. I even asked Grok specifically about this cyclopean wall. I'm like, how did they get these things with you where you can't fit a razor blade or a piece of paper through there? How did they do? And they think that they finished them off by chipping away with the dense. Why do I keep forgetting the name of the
basalt,
the dense basalt.
Now, Captain Cook in the British expedition of 1774 marveled at the precision stone megalithic masonry on Easter Island. Captain Cook compared these walls to the best in England. He was particularly impressed by the huge wall that once existed at Hango Roa, which unfortunately is now gone as the blocks were later used to build a new harbor. Many of the...
Do you think that's a fucking coincidence?
That what? The what?
On the wall to make a harbor. And it wasn't the Easter Island people because they just left that wall alone for how fucking long? And then these fucking dudes show up and just...
As the blocks were later used to build a new harbor.
So yeah,
he was particularly impressed by the huge wall that once existed at Hango Roa, which unfortunately is now gone as the blocks were later used to build a new harbor. Many of the oldest megalithic structures that existed along the cliffs that the early explorers such as Captain Cook and William J. Thompson described seeing in the 1700s and 1800s have since disappeared into the sea from the pounding ocean surf and landslides. Now, in 1923, explorer and author J. McMillan Brown visited Easter Island and later described what he saw. He stated this, quote, "The tooling and fitting of cyclopean blocks are exactly the same in Cusco and in Easter Island," end quote. Norwegian author and explorer Thor Heyerdahl was the first to conduct major excavations on Easter Island in the 1950s, and he wrote this, quote, "We discovered a megalithic wall of finely hewn and perfectly fitted blocks during our excavations on the landward side of Ahu Nanao. This buried wall was clearly older than the middle period walls visible above ground. Nothing like it was found on a single island in the whole of Polynesia. But it is typical of megalithic walls of South America.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Probability is overwhelming.
Go ahead.
Our buddy from Chanted Down, Loomis, says that there are these interesting things in some other Polynesian islands out there that are very, very underdiscovered, or, you know what I mean, underrated.
Yeah, well, he's probably right. I mean, this guy's not a, you know, this guy's a pretty mainstream. He's got a pretty mainstream take. Is there just adjacent, mainstream adjacent?
So you want to hear how that just keep that there? Okay, you want to hear how Grok says that was made? Right? Similar to Moai. Well, this is me pushing back a bit too, like saying, like, come on, you think these things are similar to the Moai carving? Builders used basalt tolki, those picks and chisels, to quarry and shape the stones. Harder basalt abraded softer rocks for fine fitting. So they use harder basalt. But I mean, these are basalt. I think these are even basalt. So they use basalt to chip out the tuff for the Moai, and they also use the same basalt to chip out basalt. I don't know. I'm not buying it. No metal tools. Experiments show stone on stone pecking and grinding achieved the snug joints.
Pecking and grinding?
Yeah, pecking and grinding. Yeah, with stone on stone. I mean,
as you do.
My point with that is who would, like, would you build something like this if it took you that long to do it? Like, to me, it's just it's Sisyphean work, right? Unless it has such a precise and important role.
Well, not only that, you got a much more limited workforce.
Yeah, what you've got enough fruits and vegetables and food and the farming's all done, and people can just spend months and months just banging stones together to make something like religious.
And you can only generate so much food on that little island.
Exactly.
You could probably catch unlimited fish, I guess, but.
So it says levers, wooden poles from palm trees, ropes from plant fibers, and earthen ramps facilitated transport and placement. Teams of 20 to 100 people could maneuver blocks using these methods as replicated in the field tests. Construction often happened in phases. Start with a core of rubble fill. Build the back seawall first for protection. Add wings and a paved ramp. Then erect a Moai using the ramp before filling it in. The tight fits achieved by trial and error placement. So you're telling me they're using trial and error with these tons, these blocks that weigh tons? Oh yeah, it doesn't fit. Just take it back. Like, as if you would ever do trial and error with massive, would you do that with massive stones? Just move them around constantly until you got it to fit?
Take it back off.
Yeah. Grinding edges for polygons where needed and leveraging the stone's natural fractures. Same people, same era, same toolkit. Moai focused on sculpting, pecking tough, while Ahu, which is these big bases, emphasized engineering, fitting basalt.
Inspiration came from the nearest continent to the east. In closing, oral traditions of the islanders state that the island was settled twice. The first time by a race known as the Long Ears, who came from the east, and the second time by the Short Ears from the west. These Long Ears appear to have been a power in the land at an early period in the history of the island. Oral traditions state that the Short Ears were merely laborers, while the Long Ears were the master builders of the larger stone statues, which were crafted in the Rano Raraku quarry and found scattered all over the island. The Long Ears are also credited to have engineered the Ahu megalithic platforms that were later repurposed as foundations for the Moai, as well as they probably invented the Rongo Rongo incised tablets with the lost language of Easter Island.
So have you heard about that?
Yeah.
The Rongo Rongo?
Yeah, apparently they were using these boards, I mean, for fishing and other stuff afterwards. Like they obviously they nobody's been able to translate it properly or to decipher it properly. And they didn't seem to really have that much reverence for them because they were using them in building and construction and stuff.
There it is. Pretty wild looking. See, what are the intricate little designs in that?
Yeah, you think AI could figure that out or something, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I was comparing it to the Voynich manuscript, but it doesn't really look anything like it. But I mean, Timmy's in the chats. Timmy's been to, was just down in South America. Did you find, see any of these sort of markings? That looks like a little snake maybe down there or something, or I don't know what the fuck that is.
That's interesting. 757 says the Moai are perhaps a later practice cult/cult that were the explanation for the Cyclopean masonry present there. Yeah, that's kind of what I was asking. I was trying to pick away a grok for this, and I was saying, like, is there any chance that some of the Moais are the first ones or the bigger ones or whatever, and these Cyclopean walls were made earlier, and the people that came in the 1200s tried to copy them to mimic it, to try and say, like, okay, well, how do we make these things? Let's use all these rocks. And like, we'll try to make some, but they're not as good. And they just don't seem to accept that. He says it's all basically the same from the 1200s.
Rongo, Rongoro Rongo. We'll have to look around for some of that stuff while we're there. I was looking for that. I thought I had the picture here somewhere, the one they excavated.
And there's oral traditions of yellow-haired giants interpreted as evidence of early inhabitants. But of course, critics dismiss it as pseudoscience, lacking datable artifacts. I mean, maybe we should look at, I'm going to do that on my own here and see what comes up here.
I'm going to share the screen for a sec here. Is that this one? Yeah. So here's the one of the excavated ones. Look how deep that shit goes down.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you mentioned that, because 757 was also mentioning something about so all that on the back. See the back? That's what they carved on the back, apparently, once they brought it down the hill.
That didn't now, come
down. Now, how long do you think that sediment took to build there? And what do you think it is?
A lot of sediment. And the thing is, it would have happened to happen somewhat slowly because it didn't knock it over in the process. A landslide would have knocked that thing over. So it's got to have a fair bit. And even a landslide might have broken in half if it was halfway filled up. So it's got to be semi-slow accumulating sediment.
It was Richard Simpson said, it's insane that this is what the mainstream is sticking to. Pretty obvious that the island has been washed with a tsunami and sediment. Exactly, that's what I was thinking. So when I asked Rock Daddies, they tried to describe that it was normal for this, for the refuse, not refuse as in garbage, but the refuse from the quarry to come down the hill. I'm like, are you kidding me? You think you're going to generate that much, like 10, 20 feet full of sediment from the quarry? It's going to come down the hill and build up. And then on top of that, there's other like the
normal. It has to happen slow enough not to knock it over or break it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is a lot of broken ones.
There is a lot of broken ones, but this thing's going to be pretty top heavy until it's like, you know, barely buried. This one just had his head sticking out.
The sedimentation process requires more than 700 years. Yeah, that's my.
And they all got the hands there, right? Going down to the navel, sort of. That one does. This one does. These ones aren't excavated yet. But I also had this one here, which shows that's the same thing there. But you come down to the bottom on this one. And it shows how far down it was. So this is in centimeters. So 550 centimeters. So what's that, like 5.5 meters?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to convert it. So 15 feet, 20 feet. 15 to 20 feet, let's say.
I wonder if there's any evidence that they were intentionally buried.
Well,
they kind of go with the slope, though, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that they would have been like that. But the reason I bring that up is because I got another, where'd it go? Another slide here I'll share. Zoom in on this a bit. This is Easter Island in Göbekli Tepe. This is that same one we're just looking at with the markings on the back. See, look at the birds, especially look at that bird right in this corner here. You see it?
Yep.
And then come down to this one.
Yeah.
And this one, yep, specifically. I mean, just the way the relief carving is done and all of that looks eerily similar. AI, what AI makes of this? The stone in the image you uploaded appears to be from Göbekli Tepe, an ancient archaeological site in southeastern Turkey. I forgot to turn on the recordings. The site dates back to around 9600 BCE and is one of the oldest known monumental structures built by humans. The carving on the stones at Göbekli Tepe are believed to have symbolic or ritual significance. The stone you provided shows several carvings, including animals and abstract shapes. Here are some key observations. Many of the stones at Göbekli Tepe are carved with images of animals such as birds, snakes, scorpions, and wild boars. The bird at the bottom of the stone appears to be a common motif at this site and could represent vultures or cranes. Above the animals are intricate geometric designs, such as triangles or zigzag patterns. These patterns may symbolize abstract ideas or blah, blah, blah. The stones often feature human-like or anthropomorphic shapes in abstract or stylized forms. The meaning of these carvings remains subject to scholarly debate, blah, blah, blah. So now the bottom one, after the Moai. The image you uploaded shows stylized carving that appears to resemble the designs found on the backs of the Moai statues on Easter Island. The Moai are famous large stone statues made by the Rapa Nui people, and blah, blah, blah. Here are some notable features. Anthropomorphic or mythical features. The central portion of the carving seems to depict human or possibly mythological features. The Birdman cult. This cult was centered around the annual ritual. Symmetry of the two fingers. There appear to be two symmetric animals or figures, which could represent the duality often found in Polynesian art. The carvings in the two images you uploaded do have notable similarities in their depiction of anthropomorphic or mythical figures. Here are the main points of the comparison. Stylized human or animal forms. Göbekli Tepe, the first stone, shows stylized animal figures, possibly birds or reptiles, along with abstract human-like shapes. Representation is somewhat schematic, emphasizing the ritual or symbolic importance rather than realistic anatomy. Easter Island, the second carving, also features highly stylized figures, likely mythological or symbolic, such as the Birdman figures. These figures, while anthropomorphic, are not realistic, but instead convey spiritual or symbolic meanings, duality, and symmetry. Göbekli Tepe, the stone carving, includes animals in human-like shape, arranged in somewhat symmetrical manner, indicating a possible symbolic balance. Easter Island, the carving shows clear symmetry, particularly in the paired mythical figures. The symmetry is often a key aspect of ritual and mythological representation, suggesting a balance between opposing forces. Three, geometric and abstract motifs. Göbekli Tepe, above the animals and human-like forms are intricate geometric patterns, such as zigzags and triangles, which seem to have symbolic or cosmological significance. Easter Island, the carvings also incorporate geometric designs, particularly in the circular motif at the center, which may symbolize the sun or celestial bodies. The combination of these motifs with the anthropomorphic figures suggests a fusion of cosmic and human elements, much like Göbekli Tepe. Four, connection to rituals and mythology. Göbekli Tepe, the carvings are associated with early religious or communal practices, possibly ancestor worship or fertility rituals. The anthropomorphic figures could represent deities, spirits, or ancestors involved in these practices. Easter Island, the figures on the Moai's back are closely related to the Birdman cult, which was a crucial part of Rapa Nui's ritual life. The anthropomorphic figures likely represent spiritual beings or ancestors, much like at Göbekli Tepe. Conclusion, both carvings, despite being from vastly different times and places, share a common focus on the symbolic representation of anthropomorphic or mythical figures, with an emphasis on symmetry, geometric patterns, and a connection to ritual and spiritual practices. These similarities suggest that both cultures used art to represent complex cosmologies and beliefs about the divine or ancestral world, which is weird when we come from a time where we're not really supposed to have art. We're supposed to be just focused on survival.
Right.
So, and not only that, they fucking look the same. That's the main thing to me, is the carving just sort of, this is just the same, that same shit that's been out in the weather compared to this stuff, which has been buried and protected on purpose. Which begs the question if some of those Moais were somehow protected in a means that maybe we can't really see anymore. Maybe it got knocked over, but.
So do you want to see how they say that they're handling some of these Moais? So when I looked at Grok, it says, so I was trying to talk about the Cyclopean walls versus the handling of the Moais and stuff, right? And the making of it. So they're saying it's similar to the carving. I already read you this stuff, but if I go to Research Gate here, it talks about teams of people maneuvering these blocks, right? You want to see what that shows? So I'm going to share this tab. So the engineers of Easter Island. So what do you think about some of this here? Archaeologists field test a theory of how Easter Island's Moais were moved. So they build them all up with
one to make walk.
No, this is prior to the walking. This is back when they were saying they were going to roll them on. So that, which is also a weird thing, because they thought, you know, they here's the theory. And this is partly Jared Diamond's work too, which he is this famous writer, right? And he says that, I'm going to just go to here. He says that all the trees were chopped down because they were so obsessed with these statues, with these Moais, they chopped all the trees down to move them. And that's why the ecosystem collapsed. And then they did, nowadays are like, these trees wouldn't have been the right trees. They're too soft inside to support rolling these things down. So that whole theory's collapsed. But that was the theory for a while, that's how the collapse happened, was because they chopped the trees down to for logistical purposes for the Moais. So now I'm just going to get back to this.
I think they say now it was a drought that killed all the trees.
Well, I think they still, I don't know, actually. But I do think they were chopping down the trees. I just don't think it was for this. But this is how they say it was happening. They build these big, so you build these big rock things. That's how you're going to, and pull it up the ramp and then to stand them up. Like, are you kidding me? It just seems like a lot of work. Look at that. You're going to do all that work to stand up a moment? Like, it just, would you do all that? It doesn't seem efficient. It just doesn't make sense to me. What do you think?
No, it seems crazy. How many are there again?
800. There's 400 in the quarry and 400, like just rounding up. 390 something. Here's a map of them right here, actually. So there's the quarry, one of the quarries. And then, wow, they're all over the island, eh?
Yeah, I wonder how many are under the water. Probably a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't. All this stuff just doesn't make sense to me. Up and down hills, and like you're gonna roll them up and down hills. Even the walking them. Yeah, you sure you can walk them on a fairly flat surface that's not too much of a hill. But how are you gonna start walking it up hills and down hills?
Here's some underwater ones.
Where are those ones from?
Sunken Easter Island Moais.
Not real ones, though, are they?
I don't see why they wouldn't be. I mean, this one's on TripAdvisor. Picture of Orca Diving Center, Easter Island. He's diving with the Moai. This one's on Flickr.
Oh, some are from a movie. Ian saying they looked into the other. There's a couple of them.
There is a couple of them?
Yeah, supposedly.
Scuba diving at Rapa Nui. Do we have any scuba divers in the team?
I don't know.
I could go poke around. That one's got corals on it and shit. Wonder how deep it is. Some were from a movie. Interesting. Anyway, that's enough of that. I thought I had another. Here, I got this thing here. We can. How do I get to this?
Do you have a problem with old woods? Well, archaeology certainly does. There's a big debate in archaeology. Did the people of Rapa Nui invent their own writing system? Rongo Rongo was this writing system used on Rapa Nui, aka Easter Island. It looks very cool, and there is a debate. Did they develop it themselves, or were they inspired by European contact? Maybe there's a little bit of bias in that idea, but to be fair, the invention of writing is super rare. It's only happened a handful of times. Not everyone is out here inventing writing. First European contact was in 1722 when the Dutch showed up, so do we have any Rongo Rongo that predates that? So far, 6 Rongo Rongo tablets.
Doesn't it make sense that every culture would have writing? Don't they all have writing?
No, because before they could write on anything, they they couldn't just write on wood or stone, I guess.
What about sand?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. No, I think you're onto something. I mean, I think that's the point. But they want to look at us as being civilized since 5000 BC because that's when they found the first writing, right?
So been radiocarbon dated, I believe. 5 of the 6 date to the early 19th century, but one predates it by quite a bit. The wood used to create this tablet here on screen now. The tree lived between 1493 and 1509, so 200 years before the arrival of Europeans. Here's where problems with old wood creep in. Wood is scarce on Rapa Nui. It tends to get reused a lot. Just because the tree is 500 years old doesn't mean the writing on it is 500 years old. A second problem is that the species of the tree is called, I had to write this down, Podocarpus latifolia. It's not from Rapa Nui or Polynesia, it's from southern Africa. Neither of these facts on their own mean that the people of Rapa Nui did not invent Rongo Rongo. The wood could have drifted to Rapa Nui, cheeky trip around Antarctica. Screw it. However, it was apparently valued for building ships' masts. So, is it a piece of a passing ship? I don't know. It's a tricky one, to be honest. It's a tricky one. To be fair to the Rapa Nui, Rongo Rongo does not really look like European writing at all. Do you have a...
It's totally different. It's one of the weird, totally different ones. There's only so many of them. All right, you want to take over for a minute?
Yeah, I mean, we should probably talk about the lost continent aspect because that is fun. And there's the whole Mu. And then, you know, the people were first finding out about them. They were searching for Terra Australis when they came across that in 1722. But there's legends and cataclysms, of course, the Polynesian one, the Tamil, Kumari Kandam, and Aboriginal stories describe sunken lands potentially echoing real sea level rises, like the people in the chats have been talking about there. 120 meters since the ice age. Some link this to comet impacts or pole shifts, but no geological corroboration. Critics note these are symbolical, not literal. So there's no smoking gun for Mu, unfortunately. So I was just trying to compare, like, there's other areas like Chantadown is talking about Namadol, Palu terraces. There's a bunch of stuff in Polynesia here that there's alternative interpretations of the sunken remnants of Mu, but it does seem to be different than the Atlantic as far as like the thing coming down. The topography maps indeed show extensive rifts and faults, part of the ring of fire encircling subduction zones, causing 90% of earthquakes and volcanoes. The East Pacific Rise, a mid-ocean ridge, this is the one that you're looking at, right? Stretches from 6,000 kilometers from Mexico to Antarctica. A divergent boundary where plates pull apart 15 centimeters per year, forming new crust. Fracture zones, Mendocino and El Tanin, cross ridges horizontally, offsetting them, visible as lines on maps due to past spreading shifts. Northwest faults like Cascadia subduction zone, 100,000 kilometers, connect to the system. Alternatives speculate this could have sunk land, but tectonics show uplift. Subsidence is gradual. So that, I have a hard time thinking that, like, out of all this, there's just this one thing on the island right here, and that was all made in from 1200 on. Like, it just, I don't know.
Well, I think those plates are moving apart too, right? Because the Pacific, the rift is getting bigger, like the Atlantic rift. So that, to me, that just makes me think it's also going down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, they say it's coming up. So, but like everybody's been saying in the chats, like if you just speculate on the Cyclopean walls, like let's just say, for example, they were prior to the Younger Dryas, then this and a bunch of these other ones take away 400 meters or 400 feet of water, right, Darren? And you said a lot of these other ones would pop up, right? You know, yes. So maybe it's ancient island chains all over the world that are 400 feet. Like a lot of this stuff would show up.
I canceled my premium subscription, the floodmaps.com or whatever it is.
Oh, did you?
But I do have this little thing from Brian Forrester, and I also have a Robert Schock clip.
Easter Island is truly one of the most mysterious and misunderstood places on Earth.
We're going to steal his promo for his trip for our trip 15 years later.
No archaeologist has ever written the true story of the island because, honestly, they've never asked the native people the history of their own island. We're very fortunate in that November 20th to 25th of this year, 2012, Dr. Robert Schock will be joining us. Dr. Robert Schock, you may know, is the man who was able to date the Sphinx in Egypt at older than the pharaohs. It's at least 7,000 years old. And that's why we are going with him to Easter Island to find out how old the giant heads on Easter Island are. And what you may not know, and we'll see in the following slides, are that there are no such things as Easter Island heads. They're in fact full bodies, the largest of which is 60 feet tall and weighs 200 tons. Also with us will be Hugh Newman, who's an expert on earth energies. My name's Brian Forrester. We do have a few spaces left, so please think about joining us, as well as our trip to Nazca, Peru before that, and Cusco and Tiwanaku, as well as Pumapunku. Thank you very much, and I look forward to meeting you.
Is there no sound for the rest of this, you son of a bitch? That's okay. I will get to... Yeah, I just had the map up, 757. I don't think I have it handy anymore of the tectonic plates. It is a junction of three tectonic plates right there. Here it is here. I can pull it up again quick. These three plates, the Pacific plate, the Antarctic plate, and the Nazca plate. I just think the main difference is if you look at the Azores plate, which I don't have in this picture, I guess that'd be these three. Is that these three right here?
Yeah.
So if you look at these three, you had up here to the upper right, the ass end of that is Siberia, and all that is on the opposite side of that plate. And Northern Europe, which is putting a bunch of weight on the opposite side of this plate. On the opposite side of the North American plate, you've got a bunch of ice up here, putting a weight on the back side of it. And then there's ice caps down on South Africa, it looks like, too, that, you know, could have had more ice on them at one time, putting some weight on the back side of that. Plus the whole African continent. Whereas this one, you have Antarctica, but there's not any really, you know, none of these have a, now I'm not ruling it out. I think that because it's moving, that's the other thing is all, so you can see when we had Neil Adams on the ocean rifts are the newest crust on the planet, which makes it look like all that shit's moving apart from each other. So if these plates are moving away from each other, when they were jammed up against each other, then that's going to be like a weird relief valve too.
But it's like I was saying, the mainstream says that there's not the geological evidence in the Pacific. Like there is, even though the stuff is questioned in the Atlantic, they have the the granite. Well,
that's what I think too. I mean, that is my thought too, is that it doesn't have the same geologic condition. Yeah. But it is still on a triple fault zone, and it does have a caldera, which is rare for volcanic islands in the ocean, or at least that's what the geologist told me. Chuck, we're going to have him on the show, I think. I'm not sure. I wonder if I just play this. Tell me if you can hear this. So that trip that they were talking about was November 2012. This is Robert Schuck, June 2013. Dude, this is June 1st, 2013. This is the launch day of the show. It was supposed to be, but we got early and we launched it, I think, May 24th. We ended up coming up with an episode, but
yeah,
June 1st is our unofficial anniversary. So tell me if you can hear this.
Yeah, well, no. Yeah.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes and no.
Okay.
It depends on what you call buried. And well, let me explain. A lot of the Moai are buried at the moment up to their shoulders, up to their chins. And I am convinced that this is natural burial, that not a situation which some people have suggested where, some people have hypothesized for whatever ritual purposes, they carved these Moais and they dug big holes, big pits, and stuck them in the pits and buried them purposefully, buried them artificially. So not that type of burial, but a lot of them are buried up to their chins or so. But all the indications are is that this was natural sedimentation that slowly buried them, which implies that they're extremely old. Some have been excavated in the past. Catherine Peace Rutledge, a woman, actually led an expedition to Easter Island in the early 1900s, and she and her crew excavated some of these buried Moai and found in every case when they excavated them, even the ones that buried all the way up to their chins, they had full bodies underneath, but no legs. Thor Heyerdahl, I'm sure lots of people have heard of the late Thor Heyerdahl, who did things like Kon-Tiki and the Ra, and he was known for his expeditions of reconstructing how ancient peoples could cross the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. He spent time on Easter Island with his research crew in the 1950s. He also excavated some Moai. He excavated one Moai in particular where it was buried up to its shoulders. He excavated down more than 6 meters and found that this was a really tall Moai and it had been buried in more than 6 meters of sediment. Again, there was a full torso there. And then just recently, in the last couple of years, several Moai have been excavated likewise, and they're finding the same thing. And every case, I'm a geologist, and I've looked at the data, and in every case where you have these excavated Moai, all the indications are that the sediment filled in slowly, gradually, cumulatively. It was not a case where they either dug a hole and artificially buried it. That looks very different geologically. It was not a case where there were all of a sudden landslides that catastrophically buried these Moai up to their necks. It wasn't a tsunami that washed in and buried them. In fact, if it were a landslide or tsunami, these tall Moai, you would expect them to be knocked over and buried, very differently. So all the indications are that these were buried in sediment, the ones that are buried slowly and gradually, which suggests that they're a lot older than traditional archaeologists have proposed. Traditional archaeologists say that the Moai, even the oldest Moai, only go back maybe 1,000, 1,500 years at the most, depending on who you talk to. But given the rate of sedimentation that I've been able to document on Easter Island, given what we know geologically, I think these Moai have been very much underestimated in terms of their age. And then there's other reasons to think that Easter Island goes back much earlier. We were talking about the...
Do you want to keep going?
Sure, for a couple of seconds, yeah.
Still room to come to Easter Island, Peter Shell.
end of the last ice age, and wouldn't East Drowne be much larger? I think that's absolutely the case. Thor Heyerdahl documented a lot of what he believed were cultural connections between East Drowne and South America, which goes against the traditional point of view. The traditional point of view is that East Drowne is really Polynesia, the easternmost portion of Polynesia, so that the origins of Easter Islanders, most people are conventional archaeologists and historians, would trace to the west, to Polynesia. Yeah, Thor Heyerdahl suggested that there was a connection between Easter Island in the east, that is South America. And in fact, one thing he found was a very unusual Moai. And so this is the exception to the rule that Moai don't have legs. Thor Heyerdahl excavated in the 1950s a Moai, what's called a Moai, a big statue. You can see it to this day on Easter Island, which looks very different than the other Moai in terms of its facial features, in terms of its body features. And it has legs on it. But the legs, it's not standing on its legs, it's kneeling on its legs. And it looks for all the world like many of the statues that you find, for instance, in Peru and Bolivia, at Tiwanaku, for instance.
There you have it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, room on the trip to come with us. It'll be good because Timmy's coming, and he was just in South America, so it'll be a good... he'll be able to tell us what looks the same, you know, but that it's that one wall is sort of the main thing I'm excited to see, other than the Moais, obviously. I mean, we'll have to see if we could find the original Moai from the artwork.
I'd love to see the quarry with all the half. I mean, apparently there's so many that are just not finished yet, which is also weird. Why they would try so many and not finish them, like hundreds of them partially quarried, apparently. Are you pulling up pics of that right now? Or?
No, I'm just looking at more of this. How do I, more of these stuff. The connection between the Easter Island and Sacsayhuaman.
Sacsayhuaman, yeah.
This one just looks like it didn't get the shit kicked out of it quite as much. In better shape. Or maybe they had time to smooth this one out because this one still has the nubs on it. No nubs here. And then hands linked underbelly. So here's another comparison here that shows the turkey statue and the... Can't be a coincidence, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, a little sort of weird belt thing in the middle.
Apparently,
it's not to the belly button. A weird coincidence?
Apparently.
Could be. Can't rule it out.
Here we go. Here's the glory pick. Look at this. This is that 3D mapping. We'll have to show that too. Look at this. I mean, is it me? Is it just me, or do I see like that looks like a face up here?
Yeah, it's totally a face.
I see a bunch of faces in here as well, like that just like seem to be like half carved and half not. Like, then there's one here. There's a couple. There's another one over here. See, I'd love to be able to. I wonder if we can walk around there. There's some little ones up there. Looks like these came right out. It looks like something came right out of there. So you're thinking that, like, when you said scoop marks, you're thinking that maybe these are like traditional scoop marks, like we saw in the Aswan quarry in Egypt.
Yeah, I was wondering.
And not like, not leftover remnants of banging rocks together.
Yeah, exactly. Limestone. There's a 7-kilometer lava tube, extensive network of. Stop the clip. Layers and layers of walls. That's not Easter Island, is it?
Softened, chiseled, poured, huge site. The same stonework is all over the Sacred Valley and on Easter Island. Oh, okay. No, it's Chinchero. There's El Gigante.
El Gigante. Easter Island features an extensive network of interconnected volcanic lava tubes with the largest system, Anatapahu, spanning over 7 kilometers in total length. These underground galleries, primarily found around the Ranucao and Taravaca volcanoes, are considered one of the largest, if not the largest volcanic cave system in Chile. While many smaller caves exist, the main interconnected system exceeds 7 kilometers. These tubes were used by the Rapa Nui for shelter, water collection, and as agricultural sites like growing banana trees. They were formed by solidified lava flows, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of interesting because the Azores has that same phenomena with all the lava tubes.
Yeah.
And you got like the buried cities in Turkey where people might have had to, I mean, Hawaii's got them, where people might have had to live things out for a little while if the sun got weird or if, you know, who was it? Didn't we just have Frank on the show said people are living in these motherfuckers?
Yeah.
Living in the caves.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to go there. I mean, 7 kilometers is a bit much for me to go into a cave, I think, probably.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you got some magic weapons and some rations and you're ready to go on a full adventure.
I don't want to allow ads on the site. It's, this website's not detect your ad blockers in line. Shut off the ad blocker. More than Moai, I discovered the impressive volcanoes and craters of Easter Island. Look at this big one. I don't think I'd want to go in that water. Easter Island is not known only for its famous Moai statue, but also its stunning volcanic landscapes and craters. Where are some of them? I want to see some of the volcanoes. There's the one big one, but I thought there was lava flows too. Somewhere. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know. I don't know if there was.
Be a lot cooler if there was. Doesn't look like it. What about this one? Can we see that? That would do. That would do for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's watch this. We'll clip.
Welcome to Dr. C's Excellent Adventures. Today we're exploring the geology of Rapa Nui.
Nice intro, buddy.
Rapa Nui is famous for its great stone statues, but it's also a fantastic place to have a close look at the diverse products of hotspot volcanism within a relatively small area. If you get the chance to travel to Rapa Nui, be sure to bring along a copy of Vizzoli and Acquacella's 2009 GSA Bulletin paper. It's the primary source for the information in this video. Easter Island is famously isolated.
You want to add that to your list, Graham?
Sure.
Isolated within the broad expanse of the Pacific Ocean. If it is indeed the product of hotspot volcanism like the Hawaiian Islands, then an obvious question is, where are the rest of the volcanoes? It turns out that there are a bunch of volcanoes in the Easter hotspot chain, but most of them never grew large enough to break above sea level. The Nazca Plate is moving very rapidly here, and for some reason the Easter hotspot is only pumping out less than 1/100th as much magma over time as the Hawaiian hotspot. Rapa Nui is made up of the tops of 3 large shield volcanoes, which are sitting on the floor of the Pacific Ocean. Shield volcanoes are built up by thousands of individual eruptions of fluid basaltic lava that layer by layer builds up a large edifice with relatively gently sloping flanks.
I'm going to skip ahead.
Shield volcanoes is famous for its extensive network of lava. When lava flows through a depression, it cools fastest.
See, so that's on the island, right? We should be able to see this.
And on Rapa Nui is easily identified by its large white plagioclase crystals. Tarawaka, the largest of the three shield volcanoes, is famous for its extensive network of lava tubes. When lava flows through a depression, it cools fastest at the surface, forming a solid roof over the hot material below. As the eruption wanes and the lava drains away, it leaves an empty tube below ground.
I'd say you probably got to be there just right at the right time if you're going to see that. Can't promise it, I guess.
Yeah.
Solidified. Solidified lava flows. Oh, well. Maybe we'll get lucky. I think I'd prefer if it wasn't. Actually, maybe that would be... I'd prefer there's no volcanic activity while we were there. You know? There's nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. All right, you got anything else?
I think that's about it.
I think that's about it. I mean, it was really kind of hard to find anything that wasn't pretty mainstream about it. So we'll have to come up with some better stuff while we're there. Figure out exactly what the hell was going on. So check that out. Come to Easter Island with us. Contact at thecabin.com. Get on it while you can. 4 spots left coming up in less than 3 months. And it includes that flight from Santiago to Easter Island and back. You just got to get yourself to Santiago. Includes a hotel room the night before and then all-inclusive while you're on the island. Check that out. Support the show. America.ca/support. Check out our other podcast. AmericaOutlawed.ca for more controversial content. And we're about to do a roundup over there too, so you can check that out. Of course, AdultBrain.ca for all the audiobooks and all that good stuff. Other than that, we love you guys. Join us in Easter Island, and we will see you next week. So many cigarettes, so refreshing.